LA County and all 29 fire departments in our county are not prepared for this type of widespread disaster. This is not a normal red flag alert.
No, it is not. But we're still in the middle of it.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
Why?
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in windy, fiery Los Angeles, this is the Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in L.A., also in California in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains KKRN, up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, and Eugene's KEPW, Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Richmond, Virginia's WRWK, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950 KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internets on the Progressive Voices Channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, and most of your favorite podcast sites. Blanketing Planet Earth, I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. And yes, we are fine after a long night of very high winds. The folks out here in Los Angeles, at least those of us a few miles inland from the coast in Hollywood, awoke to eerily black skies today, after a night of nearby fires. Now, both near the coast and sort of inland from where we are, pretty much right in Hollywood, those black skies have since given way throughout the day to an orange pall, if that's the best way to describe it.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
As the sun has finally broken through much of the ash from those fires. When we began yesterday's broadcast, the unusually high Santa Ana winds were the main problem out here, even as everyone had been on high alert, given the wildfire weather warnings that we'd been receiving from the National Weather Service for the past few days. A service, by the way, that Donald Trump and his Project 2025 pals have said that they hope to privatize, you know, to charge us for that currently free service, that currently free and critical information. That seems like a bad idea to me. In any event, we had been on watch yesterday, and I had mentioned the huge tree limb that flew in from our neighbor's yard and crushed the canopy on our back patio due to the high winds we were already having. And as we began the show, a fire had broken out amid the winds in the Pacific Palisades area of the coast near Santa Monica and a few miles south of Malibu. I think when we started the show, that fire was a bit over 100 acres or so.
Yep.
By the time we signed off, the blaze had expanded to about 300 acres. Desi Doyen, was that the... No, it's been hard to keep track of all of these numbers.
That's true. It was about 300 acres or so.
And by the way, I got to apologize. I sound a bit hoarse today. I suspect it's because of all of the ash in the sky out here. It's kind of dry for some reason. In any event, not long after we got off air, the evacuations began in Pacific Palisades. By the time we posted the show to bradblog.com, the fire in the Palisades had grown to more than 1,000 acres, with some 30,000 residents advised to evacuate immediately from the encroaching flames. The situation got much worse overnight, as you may have heard, and we hope to speak shortly with someone who you may know, who evacuated to safety, but unfortunately appears to have lost his home in the bargain. A lot of folks have been touching base with us today. Thank you to make sure that we're okay, which we are for right now. Pretty much, as I said, in the heart of Hollywood, several miles inland from the from Pacific Palisades, though other destructive fires have now since broken out inland, including inland from us, east of us, in Pasadena and Altadena in the foothills there, a few miles east of where we are now, and up in Sylmar, which is north of us in the sort of northernmost suburb of L.A. County. So northwest and east of us. Mind you, geographically, I believe that L.A. County is the largest in the nation. It takes nearly an hour to drive from one side of it to the other when there is no traffic. And there is never no traffic in L.A. But we've had a hellish night of fire and winds out here that kept airborne firefighters from even being able to do much of anything to deal with any of the at least three fires that are now raging.
Actually, there's now a fourth fire.
A fourth fire
that has erupted in just the last few hours. It's a small fire called the Woodley Fire. It's near the intersection of the 405 and the 101 freeway, for anybody who knows where that is, Balboa Recreation Area. So anyway, that's another one that's going on now.
Another, well, now four fires. That said, it's being reported that the airborne firefighters have now been able to take to the air again as the winds have begun to ease up in portions of the county. That's good news. But also, as of airtime, the fires have officially become the most destructive in L.A. history, with, thankfully, just two so far reported dead at this hour, but having burned at least 1,000 structures as that fire in Palisades, that was burning just a few hundred acres as of the time we signed off air, but it exploded overnight to more than 5,000 acres by Wednesday morning, according to the LA Times this afternoon. And now that they've been able to get planes up into the air, that number has apparently been revised to more than 24 square miles at last check.
Yep, that's a lot.
It burned down to the Pacific Coast Highway, where it engulfed homes along the iconic stretch, says the Times. Many homes and businesses have been destroyed. LA County Fire Chief Anthony Marone said during a news conference on Wednesday morning. He said that while there have been no fatalities in the Palisades fire, the two deaths reported so far have been in the Pasadena fire, that officials have seen, quote, a high number of significant injuries to residents who did not evacuate, in addition to first responders who were on the fire line. The so-called Eaton fire, that's the one near Altadena and Pasadena, which broke out Tuesday evening, had burned more than 10,000 acres as of this afternoon, whipped up by gusts of up to 99 miles per hour in the area, according to the Angeles National Forest. Recall, we shared the warnings of up to 100 mile per hour hurricane force winds on yesterday's program. More than 100 structures have been destroyed there as of airtime, according to the fire chief near Pasadena. The Hearst fire, which spread quickly during high winds overnight up in Sylmar in northern L.A., had burned more than 500 acres, at least as of midday. On Wednesday, the roughly 1,500 firefighters assigned to the fires in Palisades and in the foothills above Pasadena were bracing for another challenging day. A fire fueled by extreme winds. Red flag warnings remain in effect even now for L.A. County and much of Ventura County, which is north of here, up the coast a bit. Those warnings are in place through Thursday as of now, with officials still warning of a, quote, life-threatening, destructive, and widespread windstorm. Winds are predicted to ease throughout the day, however, but will linger through Friday, forecasters said. Some of those forecasts even predicted they could kick up again on Friday.
Now, to give you a sense of how fast, for example, the Palisades fire is moving, it's now, like we said, more than 24 square miles.
Yeah.
It was spreading at a rate of more than 5 football fields every minute.
Really?
Yes.
Yikes.
According to the LA Times.
Well, that may be why the National Weather Service had warned of a, quote, particularly dangerous situation across the San Gabriel Mountains, Beverly Hills, and Hollywood Hills. Oh, that's us. And a number of coastal areas. Now, that particularly dangerous situation tag, which is difficult to say, awkwardly worded, but it's actually an official thing. It's the most dangerous type of red flag warning. The particularly dangerous situation red flag warning. But we talked about that phrase just a few weeks ago when the Weather Service had issued the same warning. About a month ago, when you'll recall the fire in Malibu that led to the evacuations at the time of folks like Cher and Dick Van Dyke. That fire went on to burn more than 4,000 acres. Destroy 20 structures and damage 28 more. This one in Palisades appears far larger. Add to it what's going on in Pasadena and the other fires. And yeah, we've got a mess. Now, this type of red flag warning, the so-called particularly dangerous situation, or PDS, which is a little easier to say, is expected to occur on average once every 3 to 5 years. But the National Weather Service office out here in Oxnard, California, has now issued 3 such warnings in just this fire season alone, just to give you an idea of how bad it is. But I should also note that the Governor Gavin Newsom, yesterday, I believe, said that we no longer have fire seasons. We have fire years, basically fires all year round. And I think he's right. I mean, if this were August or September or even October, perhaps this kind of fire, these kind of fires would be normal. But last I checked the calendar, this is January. And we're still fighting wildfires out here in scorched and climate changed Southern California, where we've had just about 0.1 inches of rain, 0.1 inches since last May. That is a tiny fraction of the 4.64 inches that downtown Los Angeles normally gets on average by this point in the season. So vegetation is very dry, and it comes after 2 seasons in which we had a whole lot of rain, which ended a 5-year or so drought. And that means there's a lot of literal dried out fuel for these fires right now. The National Weather Service reported wind gusts of 99 miles per hour near Altadena on Tuesday night, 98 miles per hour near Woodland Hills at 9:30 p.m., and 84 miles per hour at Hollywood Burbank Airport at 8:30 p.m. Quote, "We are absolutely not out of danger yet," said the Los Angeles Fire Department chief, adding that these fires are stretching the capacity of emergency services to the maximum limit. Apparently, they were prepared for 1 or 2 fires, but not now for 4 fires.
Right. There was a big press conference on Wednesday with L.A. City and L.A. County officials. They talked a lot about how they have been tried to pre-position assets and personnel across the region. You know, more than 120 fire trucks in different areas, more than a thousand personnel. But it was still too much. It's emergency resources are still stretched too thin. Fire crews have now been working 48 hours straight, some of them. There are fire crews that are on the way now from Northern California, nearby states, and even Canada. The Defense Department is sending assets. The California and Nevada National Guard have been activated. They're also coming. Remember, all of this has unfolded in just the last 24 hours or so.
And help, in fact, may be on the way in the form of the federal government as well, as you note, because, in fact, the winds over the past 24 hours have grounded Air Force One. Which President Biden happened to be here on Tuesday in Los Angeles to formally declare 2 new protected wildlife areas out near Coachella in the desert. That ceremony with the governor of California was canceled because of all of this. And the president was not able to leave town. He's now expected to sign the Antiquities Act declaration at the White House next week, I believe, during his final week in office. But while he was in town, However, he was able to sign an emergency disaster declaration, so that was convenient.
Yes, so that is already underway. Now, at that press conference, the officials talked about how there just simply is not enough water to deal with all four blazes that have erupted in this 24-hour period up in Pacific Palisades. They have these massive storage tanks, as you mentioned, that were depleted so quickly they were unable to refill them, partly because the fire prevented them from accessing them. Here's the CEO of Los Angeles, the city-owned electric and water utility. Her name is Janice Quinones, talking about the difficulties of trying to deal with the water.
We had a tremendous demand on our system in the Palisades. We pushed the system to the extreme. Four times the normal demand was seen for 15 hours straight, which lowered our water pressure. If there's a message you take away from me today, is I need our customers to really conserve water, not just in the Palisade area, but the whole system, because the fire department needs the water to fight the fires, and we're fighting a wildfire with urban water systems, and that is really challenging.
And it had to be done with urban water systems because, as I said, they couldn't do the usual airdrops that they might have in cases like this. For roughly 15 hours, AP reports, water systems face four times more than normal demand, lowering water pressure and causing some fire hydrants to run dry. Demand was so high that it wasn't enough to fill the 3 1-million-gallon tanks that help maintain pressure for the hydrants in the hills of Palisades. One tank ran out entirely late Tuesday afternoon, another in the evening, and the third early on Wednesday morning. By sunrise on Wednesday morning, much of the Pacific Coast Highway remained in total darkness, enveloped by thick smoke from the Palisades fire. We had much of that darkness all the way out here into Hollywood. Entire structures in the Palisades were still actively burning with tree limbs, power lines down. The fire had jumped the highway straight to the coast. The LA County Sheriff Robert Luna said 32,500 residents were under evacuation orders in the fire near Pasadena. 37,000 residents were ordered to be evacuated in the Palisades fire, both very densely populated. And late night near that Pasadena fire, a senior center had to be evacuated, and elderly residents, there's photographs and videos of this, elderly residents had to be rolled down the streets in their wheelchairs to eventually be picked up by ambulances as the fires and the winds were just moving so quickly. With an estimated 1,000 structures destroyed and the flames still growing on Wednesday, the Pacific Palisades fire is reportedly now far more destructive. It's the most destructive in history in the city of L.A., far more destructive than the second most destructive, according to statistics kept by the Wildfire Alliance. Structures refer to homes and other buildings. The last most destructive fire was the Serre Fire back in November of 2008. It destroyed 604 structures up in Sylmar, the northernmost suburb of the city, as I note. Before that, it was a 1961 Bel Air Fire that stood for nearly half a century as the most destructive fire in the city's history. It burned nearly 500 houses in the Tony enclave of Bel Air, including the homes of actor Burt Lancaster, Zsa Zsa Gabor, and other celebrities at the time. The L.A. Police Chief Jim McDonald cautioned residents to stay vigilant on Wednesday, even if they're not currently in an evacuation zone, as the fire continues to spread and pop up in different locations. He said, "None of us know where the next one is going to be." As noted, you've been following some of these statements from officials at their various press conferences throughout the day.
Yes. Now, the fire chief of L.A. County was warning people to please stay indoors, please stay off the roads, even if you're not in an evacuation area, because one of the scary things about this is these high winds are causing embers to fly for, you know, a mile or two. So they can gain a new foothold and create new fires, and that is a huge part of the problem. So anyway, L.A. County Fire Chief Anthony Marone, he said that he underscored that they really don't have enough personnel to handle all of these fires.
LA County and all 29 fire departments in our county are not prepared for this type of widespread disaster. There are not enough firefighters in LA County to address four separate fires of this magnitude. We were prepared. We did get state pre-position resources that came from Northern California that were up in the Santa Clarita Valley. We did hire additional firefighters from the LA County Fire Department and pre-position them in the Santa Monica Mountains. The LA County Fire Department was prepared for one or two major brush fires, but not four, especially given these sustained winds and low humidities. Like our Director of Emergency Management said, this is not a normal red flag alert. So we're doing the very best we can, but no, we don't have enough fire personnel in LA County between all of the departments to handle this.
Gives you a sense of the amount of people and personnel and assets that are required to handle these sudden, shocking, extreme weather events that we've seen all over the country just over the last year, North Carolina, for example.
And why is that, Desi Doyen? And why are we all of a sudden? What does all of this mean? Why is all of this happening?
Well, there are several factors specifically related to LA and the fire storm that we are experiencing right now. It's the strong winds, the lack of precipitation, and an increase in evaporative demand. Now, that is what scientists
fancy
call.
Fancy word.
Yeah, it's basically a thirsty atmosphere. So we have these, you know, climate change makes the extremes even extremier. So the dries are drier, the wets are wetter. And right now, California, as you mentioned, has a huge rain deficit, only a trace amount of rain for the last 300 days or so. A windstorm that came in from the desert that was hot air and super, super dry, what one scientist called an atmospheric blow dryer that created a wind-driven ember storm that carried sparks farther and farther away from the fires, and also extremely low humidity. It's below 19% in Southern California, and Santa Monica's humidity was down at 4%. That's really, really, really dry.
Sounds like a particularly dangerous situation.
Yes, and the thing about the thirsty atmosphere, what happens is that warmer atmosphere warmer temperatures increase the amount of water that the atmosphere can absorb, and that then dries out the landscape because the atmosphere, the air, literally sucks the moisture out of the soil and out of plants. So when the atmosphere sucks out the moisture without returning that water in the form of precipitation like rain, then there's going to be much less water available to those plants. They dry out, and that's what creates those tinderbox conditions.
So that's where we essentially are at this hour. Lord knows where we'll be by tomorrow. Hopefully the winds are dying down and the planes are back up in the air, and we'll be able to get some control over this. But that's where we are. We will, of course, continue to cover the fallout. And speaking of the fallout, let's take a quick break here. And we will come back with our friend, our guest, who is standing by now, our friend John Amato. Of Crooks and Liars. You may know the beloved website, crooksandliars.com. He's an old friend of ours, an old colleague. Apparently, he lost his home last night. Quick break, and we're back with John Amato to discuss that. Right here on the broadcast, I'm Brad Friedman.
What the public hears on the public airwaves matters. At the broadcast, we do our best to bring you accurate news and analysis on the issues that actually matter, and we do it all independently, without corporate or political influence. But we can't do it without you, now more than ever. Please help us stay on your public airwaves by going to bradblog.com/donate to help keep us going. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Welcome back to the broadcast. Brad Friedman from BradBlog.com. On Tuesday afternoon, our old friend John Amato, who you may have heard on this program over the years as the creator of the long-running, notorious Crooks and Liars blog, he posted a photo on Blue Sky of encroaching black smoke that could be seen from his patio, apparently, in Pacific Palisades with the text, quote, "Had to evacuate from the Palisades, not fun." About 7 hours later, he posted at Blue Sky again, this time to say, quote, "My house is gone. The high winds doomed our community." Joining us now is the great John Amato. John, thank you for taking some time to join us today. I am so sorry about what happened. Where are you right now? How are you on the morning after you say you lost your house in the Pacific Palisades fire?
Hey, Brad. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, I'm okay. A friend of mine graciously took me in. I'm in Santa Monica. One of the residents, my neighbor across the street, she has an art school over in West LA. So, you know, when it started, you know, I was saying like at 11:55, life was great, you know, and did some work and talked to. And then at 11:56, I got a knock on the door and my neighbor said, "Are you packing?" And it's like, what? You know, and I look, I could see the smoke and, you know, but even then, you know, there was no evacuation notices yet, you know, but, you know, fire is always a worry. So I was able to, you know, I was a professional musician for a long time. Mm-hmm. So I have a lot of instruments. So I was able to pack up my flute and my alto and tenor sax. You know, still I had the belief it's not because the fire's never like reached this far. You know, I mean, the denial of a fire, but the winds was so high. And that's really, I mean, you know, 60 and 100 mile an hour winds just doomed the entire region because normally this would have been contained. And then another issue was the fire department, you know, helicopters and air, you know, waters, you know, could not be used. So firemen were so handicapped that the wind just kept blowing the embers. And yeah, I had a neighbor. So I was able, my other neighbors were able to squeeze me in. I'd had a car accident, so I didn't have a new car yet. So I was able to take some important things. The one thing is I didn't have enough time to get all my clothes, so I got, you know, two pairs of sweats, a pair of socks, and t-shirts. And
well,
that's it,
you've never been known for being a great dresser, John. So you'll do fine.
Marco.
But
I know.
I wondered how, because you had said your neighbors helped you evacuate, so you did not get an official warning, a mandatory evacuation. They just came over and said, "Look, we got to get out of here," and you said, "Okay, let's go."
I mean, you know, we were all like, there's some great apps. So we were getting alerts from where it was happening and it was still fairly far away. But we all were, you know, people, I was starting to pack, and my neighbor across the street, you know, they have like, you know, it's a manufactured home park and the house is in front of me, you know, it's a beautiful sort of, you know, ocean views. It's incredible. It was a life dream to live in that area, you know? And so it was like, okay, I'll start to pack. And then finally, as I was beginning to get my stuff together is when they issued the warnings, to evacuate.
Were you able to see the incoming fires from where you are, or was it smoke off in the distance?
You saw the one picture. I have a couple other pictures, but I wasn't able at that point to actually see the flames, but it was on its way. And, you know, down the beach, they had set up, places, we could have, like, the managers of the park stayed, you know, as long as they could, because they had to turn off the gas if it was going to come, so they did that. And my other friend, my neighbor across the street, he's he was a captain in the Air Force, and he's like the block captain, he stayed for a long time, and we talked, and he tried to put out the fire on my house, but then everything, he said it was so bad, like trees were exploding. He actually, then he had to abandon, so he was able to get out, but it's just total destruction. I mean, it's everything he said is just melted to the ground.
The community. So you haven't been back there to see.
No, it's like the police blocked off. If you're in LA, coming up the PCH from south, if you get to, yesterday at least, that if you got to Temescal Canyon Drive, then they just blocked it off, so no one was able to go north, and so then it was just you know, as you know, with LA, if one traffic light is stopped, you know, traffic backs up for miles.
Well, yeah, sure. So, well, I mean, there's not a lot of roads there in or out.
Well, it's only one main road, right? PCH.
And we've heard these stories of people who have been unable to evacuate just because of the traffic and people abandoning cars to hightail it on foot. Did you run into any of that? And is that still going on as far as you know?
Well, I mean, you know, I haven't been able to check the news right now. I'm getting ready, taking an Uber up to my friend's house in Reseda, to stay for a few days. And, you know, but it's just basically getting footing. Okay, what's the next right action when you're facing an emergency or something of this nature? You know, it does not bode well if you panic or get crazy about it. So I did deep breathing. Okay, what's the next right thing to do? You know, and so that's how I've been living these, you know, since yesterday. And so it's just, it's still a mess. I mean, and it was because of the winds. So, I mean, the fires came even close to the Santa Monica area. And I mean, you could see the smoke. I was in West LA. I mean, and the smoke was just like, you know, thick. It was crazy. I'd never seen that smoke that far away from Malibu and the Palisades.
Yeah.
So it's, I mean, you know, again, it was the wind. It's caused, I mean, it's, I think people just didn't really expect the wind. It just made things progress really fast.
Before I saw your post at Blue Sky on Tuesday night, I had been actually texting with our mutual friend, Heather Digby Parton, who's a frequent guest on this program. She, and by the way, she reports that she is doing fine. She's in Santa Monica. She's not far from the Palisades on the coast there, but she's doing fine. And I thought our listeners would want to know that she says she lives in a quote, concrete jungle where she believes there is no danger of fire. There had been warnings for days, but we've had so many warnings about this and about weather like this that I think people sort of take it for granted. Oh, I'll be okay here. There was no particular warning to the community that this community was especially vulnerable prior to Tuesday night?
No, I mean, you know, look, when you're in, you know, because of the Malibu fires from years ago, you know, everyone is always sort of on alert about this. You know, it's not like, how could this happen? It could happen. But still, you know, like we've never seen the speed of this fire because of the wind and because, you know, the fire department didn't have the tools available to them because of the winds. It just spread so fast. And cement buildings have melted down, you know, but it's not, I think it's contained where it didn't make it into Santa Monica, but there was evacuation notices north of San Vicente, which is, you know, coming into Santa Monica. So it was, you know, the devastation is just, it's incredible.
Yeah. And I should note, by the way, that for folks in Santa Monica, there was an evacuation. I think it was a mandatory evacuation, if I'm not mistaken, Des, in
Yes,
parts
but just for
of
an
Santa
edge,
Monica?
The edge
right.
of Santa Monica, that's at the foot of the foothills there. So
right.
there's a preparing for evacuation notice for folks that are south of that, of south of San
Vicente. And also, you know, I went to Pasadena and Altadena, and a friend of mine, I just found that his house is safe. But he just said the embers that, you know, the wind was blowing these flaming embers everywhere.
Yep.
So, you know, that's why if it had continued, these flaming embers could have really just, it could have kept going.
And
it's like a tidal wave of fire.
Yeah, a tidal wave of fire. Mm. And we should note that those winds still are kicking up in a lot of areas. They've been pretty continuous out here in Hollywood, where we think we're safe as well, but they have been continuous. We're expecting to see more wildfire weather predicted for the weekend, I hate to say. But have you heard John Amato from anybody yet, authorities yet of any kind, local, state, federal, anyone, or is it just too early in the hours after losing your house?
Yeah, it's too early. I mean, all my neighbors, you know, at this point appears that everybody got out. So there, you know, but there was, you know, and everybody has animals in my community. And there was a stray cat called that I had called Cooper that I was feeding, you know, that wouldn't come in the house. And so I wonder, you know, I was just thinking about her. But, you know, they have the capacity to survive. But yeah, it's, you know, it's terrible. I had actually called, you know, I was texting with Heather and, you know, she wasn't home at the time. But, you know, it is, you know, it's too early. I actually, you know, went on the FEMA website to start seeing, you know, to put in if I can get any assistance. But again, I'm just, you know, we do have insurance, but we know how the insurance people, it's not like, oh, yes, you know, yes, you have protection of fire, you know, but, you know, like, it's not like they're going to do anything anytime soon. So,
well, John, I will look forward to hearing of your experience with FEMA and how that goes and how well that system works or does not in the days ahead. Do you have any sense of what the community is going to need in those coming days? And if there's anything that listeners right now can do to either, you know, help you or help others in affected areas like yours and in some of the other communities that, you know, that are experiencing the same thing today?
Yeah, I would just, you know, caution people, just stay away from the areas because there's still, you know, still a lot happening. And, you know, I mean, I think I heard where they were like, it was like hurricane category 2 winds blowing up to 100 miles an hour.
Yeah, that's about right.
Right. So I would just say, you know, contact people that you know are in the area, you know, and offering shelter and food is it's the power of people and the power of community. I have great friends and my neighbors are all just terrific and everyone's still processing and, you know, in shock. I mean, yeah. I haven't shed any tears yet, but that's coming. You know, I mean, the one thing I did, you know, there's two things. It's funny, right? What you think about. I had gotten a foul ball from Reggie Jackson in 1973 in Yankee Stadium. And I left that because it, and also then I recorded a couple of tracks for Ringo Starr back in 2002. And he actually drew up like on the jewel case. Uh-huh. They put the tunes on there and he put Love Ringo that he drew it, you know, and it's like, oh man, I can't believe I left that. But
wow.
So it's out of all the things that I did lose, you know, those are two that are sticking with me right now. Yeah. It's weird how the mind works. And when you think about what's important to you, you know.
But
anyways,
you raise a great point, and because I was going to ask, had you prepared in advance? You know, they're always warning us, you know, have a go bag ready with the things that you really care about or a list of things you can grab. I guess you hadn't thought about that until.
Well, no, yeah, we all have little go bags, but it's like it happened so fast. I was able to save, you know, I have a great flute, an alto, and a tenor sax, but, you know, I lost a baritone sax, a soprano sax, a clarinet, a piccolo, an alto flute, like that stuff. But I was able to get what I'd hope was, you know, my major things out, and, you know, everything else, you know, it's a drag to say the least.
Indeed it is. I will say this. We are really glad that you're okay today, even if your house was not. And please let us know what we can do in the days ahead to help out if there's anything. I do want to note that you've got a great crew over at crooksandliars.com as they are continuing to post as ever today, keeping up with all of the ongoing nightmares. So, you know, hopefully you can take care of yourself in the coming days, not worry about the blog, let everyone else take care of it while the Crooks and Liars folks, just keep it going in the days ahead, and hope you'll, let us know if there's anything that we can do, to help out.
Thank you so much. Yes. I told them last night, I guess I'm playing hooky today. You know,
that's
no,
it.
They're the best. I mean, they're the best. My managing editor, Carol Lee, is awesome. Fran, my associate editors, just all the writers, Red Painter and Conover and Heather and Jamie, you know, and Capper, and you know, I'll miss Susie. You know, they're all like, they're just the best. They're there right there. So I don't have to worry about that, which is a big relief.
Well, you get a day or two off at best, John, and then that's it. We expect you back at work. Hey,
yes, I need to work. You know,
yeah, I bet you do. To just keep yourself occupied as we figure all of this out. And to that end, by the way, thank you for joining us. I was hesitant to even call and check in with you because I know you got much bigger problems. But I think it's helpful for folks to hear from you and to hear from you know, someone who experienced what is going on right now in Southern California, and I'm afraid it's going to keep going on. Too much more in the future as things get worse and worse out here. But thanks, John. You're great.
All right.
We love you. Hope to talk to you soon. Stay safe, brother.
Thanks, Desi. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So, wow.
Yeah. Wow, indeed.
I appreciate his good spirits. I'm concerned how much of that is actually, you know, still shock, as
adrenaline.
He says. Yeah.
Yeah.
But when I saw that had happened, I had actually heard it from Heather first. I was texting with her to make sure she was okay.
Right.
And she said, John lost his house. And then a few minutes later, I checked Blue Sky, and sure enough.
John lost his house.
He says he lost his house. And, you know, we're not one of those programs that, you know, wants to get the victims on the air as soon as possible to see them, you know, weep and cry and share their losses. So I wasn't even sure if John would want to join us, but I'll tell you what, I sent him a text this morning to see, and he said, sure, anytime, happy to be on the show, let me know, and there he is.
Well, that is John, ready to help anybody right off the bat, no matter what he is himself is going through. That is what John Amato is like. And I just wanted one thing that he noted about how people can help. The L.A. City has posted different areas that need assistance and different organizations that people can donate to. What they do ask is that people do not just randomly drop off items, goods, clothing, food, whatever. And that is a rule that goes for every single disaster. It's helpful to know when the donations are going to be brought in, if they're going to be physical goods, but you need to find out in advance who needs it, where to take it, because just dropping off stuff actually creates a bigger burden for the people who are trying to organize the response, the emergency response. So cash donations are always helpful. The Red Cross is always a good place to start, but there are other places that are posted on the LA City website. So that's just another thing to keep in mind when no matter where you are, helping people is really, 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 really needed and helpful, but it is helpful to do it in ways that are more organized and actually help the folks that are the first responders.
Yeah, and certain organizations will say, we need this, but we don't need that, or
right.
We need this in this way, you know, packaged in this way and so forth.
Yes, you help them when you keep it organized. Another important thing is, as you mentioned with John, is having your go bag ready and thinking through those things. He didn't have time, and he also didn't have a car, so he was limited in space, it sounds like, on what he could take, but it is good to have that list ready in addition to your go bag, depending upon how much time you have to prepare.
I might also note this. It's not a bad time to sign up for a subscription to crooksandliars.com because all of those folks, whether it's John Digby, Brad Blog, we all support. We all continue with the support of listeners. So, yikes.
Yes, independent media folks, they do rely on their listeners, on their readers, and so that kind of support is critical during times like this, especially for folks like John who have to rebuild.
Yep, indeed. All right, let's take a quick break here, and we will come back with a little bit of non-fire news. Some stuff that I've been trying to get to all week, all truncated. Some of that is straight ahead on the broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Don't touch that dial. Hey, this is Brad. Please consider supporting whichever progressive media outlet is serving you. Most, just like us, do not receive corporate or political support. We all need your support to counter the powerful corporate media echo chamber. From Desi Doyen and myself, thank you.
Be keen,
yeah,
if just for a while.
Sure is, ain't it? Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. President-elect Donald Trump, they're not yet calling him king. He's just acting that way. He is asking the U.S. Supreme Court to delay his planned sentencing Friday in his criminal hush money case in New York State, setting up a potential test of the high court's ruling to extend broad immunity from prosecution to former presidents. That broad ruling, that broad immunity, of course, is something that is nowhere to be found in the U.S. Constitution, but his buddies on the U.S. Supreme Court invented it to protect Donald Trump. And now the U.S. Supreme Court is considering delaying his sentencing that is planned for Friday in New York, even though that case is a state criminal case, a New York state criminal case, not a federal case, in which Trump was found guilty on 34 counts of falsifying business records to cover up his hush money payments to a porn star to help him cheat to win the 2016 election. So what the federal Supreme Court should have to do with any of this is unclear, as Trump's sentencing is currently set for Friday in New York court, and where the judge has already said that he doesn't even plan to sentence Trump to jail time or even probation. But the sentencing nonetheless would complete the process of Trump being formally classified as a felon, and he would be the first to ever be sworn in as president of the United States. But having no jail time, a get out of jail free card, apparently that's not enough for this guy. In their request late Tuesday, Trump's attorneys told the Supreme Court that the president elect is immune from criminal proceedings, and that his sentencing should be postponed while his appeals in the case continue to, quote, prevent grave injustice and harm to the institution of the presidency and the operations of the federal government. Well, thanks for looking out for the institution of the presidency, Mr. Trump. The Supreme Court asked prosecutors in the office of the Manhattan District Attorney to respond to his to Trump's request by Thursday morning, with Trump's sentencing hearing currently scheduled for Friday at 9:30 a.m. Eastern Time. The justices could act at any time after the state's response is filed. We'll see what they do. Trump would need the votes of at least five of the nine justices to postpone his sentencing. He himself appointed three of the Republican members of that court. Close court watchers could not recall the Supreme Court ever stepping in to prevent a state court from sentencing a criminal defendant. But of course, Trump's situation is unique because he is the first ever former president and future president to have been found guilty of criminal felony acts. Unfortunately, given all the breaking news over the past couple of days, some related to Trump's crimes, and now the fires out here in Los Angeles have had to postpone or cancel entirely some of the stuff that I'd hoped to get to this week, including coverage of the late, great President Jimmy Carter and his memorial services and some of the reminders that he offers of what a president should be. I think he offers a great contrast, frankly, to what is about to happen in a week or so time when Donald Trump is sworn in for his second term. But just to hit a few points here that also seem relevant today, when Jimmy Carter chose branding designs for his presidential campaign back in 1976, he passed on the usual red, white, and blue. He wanted green, in order to emphasize how much the Georgia Democrat enjoyed nature and prioritized environmental policy. Former President, Vice President Al Gore, who should have been president, but Vice President Al Gore, whose climate advocacy earned him the 2007 Nobel Peace Prize, called Jimmy Carter, quote, a lifelong role model for the entire environmental movement. As president, Carter implemented the first U.S. efficiency standards for passenger vehicles and household appliances.
In other words, he worked really hard to save you money.
Yes, and to save the planet while we're at it. As we discussed earlier this week, he created the U.S. Department of Energy, which streamlined energy research, and he more than doubled the wilderness area under the National Park Service protection. He left office in 1981 shortly after receiving a West Wing report linking fossil fuels to rising carbon dioxide levels in Earth's atmosphere. Carter's top environmental advisors urged, quote, immediate cutbacks on the burning of fossil fuels to reduce what scientists at the time called carbon dioxide pollution. His biographer, Jonathan Alter, said nobody anywhere in the world in a high government position was talking about this problem before Jimmy Carter. The White House released the findings about carbon dioxide pollution, which drew forgettable news coverage, AP notes. The New York Times published its story on this on the 13th page of the paper. So the New York Times, which has been helping to screw over the globe for decades at this point, still at it. The report recommended at the time limiting global average temperatures to 2 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels. Does that sound familiar? If it does, it's because 35 years later, in the 2015 Paris Climate Accords, participating nations set a very similar goal. Ronald Reagan, who defeated Jimmy Carter after just one term, ended high-level conversations about carbon emissions because, you know, that would hurt his buddies in the fossil fuel industry. He also opposed efficiency standards to save you money as government overreach, he called it, and he rolled back regulations at the time. While the 39th president will be remembered for setting a national energy policy and working on peace accords, it was his establishment of an agency aimed at responding to disasters that continues to impact many communities today, even communities here in Los Angeles. Since the country's formation in the 1700s, local governments have faced disasters in which the needed response has been considered too great for them to handle. The federal government started providing aid and assistance in the early 1800s, but it wasn't until Carter's signing of Executive Order 12127 that an actual agency was finally solely tasked with responding to hurricanes, floods, earthquakes, and other other disasters of all types, including, yes, wildfires. According to the Jimmy Carter Presidential Library and Museum, in addition to the Department of Energy and the Department of Education, which Jimmy Carter also created, he also signed into existence the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA, which our friend John Amato mentioned that he was just logging on to see what kind of help he may be able to get from the federal government after his house burned to the ground in the Palisades fire overnight. From day one, FEMA training documents still read, citing President Carter's April 1, 1979 executive order, that FEMA has remained committed to protecting and serving the American people. That commitment to the people we serve and the belief in our survivor-centric mission will never change. It is hard to imagine such a declaration from the incoming guy who has, despite what's going on here in Los Angeles, been taking to social media to make some obnoxious comments.
Yeah, he's being a jerk as usual. CNN reports that in a post on his social media network on Wednesday, Trump used his favorite derisive nickname for Governor Gavin Newsom, and he also criticized the governor for resisting Trump's demands to do what Trump wants to do with California's water, take more water out of storage and send it to the industrial agriculture of the Central Valley. And, you know, that water and its use is balanced by water managers so that it can go to rivers to help sustain the state's salmon fishing industry.
And yet, while the fires are ongoing,
while people are dying,
Donald Trump takes the opportunity to attack the sitting governor who is dealing with the fires.
And insult the state. Yep.
But as the 39th president, Jimmy Carter, lies in state in the U.S. Capitol today, in advance of his funeral and his burial this week, I thought it might be nice to close with some of the remarks on Wednesday at the U.S. Capitol near the coffin of the late president by Vice President Kamala Harris.
Jimmy Carter was a forward-looking president with a vision for the future. Consider his establishment of the Department of Energy in 1977, which anticipated the central role it would play in addressing the climate crisis. His creation of FEMA in 1979, which enabled our nation to mobilize a national response to disasters, which has helped countless communities rebuild and recover. And his founding of the Department of Education later that year, which elevated public education institutions and increased national standards for the education of America's children and future leaders. Jimmy Carter was that all too rare example of a gifted man who also walks with humility, modesty, and grace. Recall the stories from the 1976 campaign about how he slept in the homes of his supporters to share a meal with them at their table and to listen to what was on their minds. James Earl Carter Jr. loved our country. He lived his faith, he served the people, and he left the world better than he found it. And in the end, Jimmy Carter's work and those works speak for him, louder than any tribute we can offer. May his life be a lesson for the ages and a beacon for the future.
Vice President Kamala Harris at the Capitol Rotunda eulogizing President Jimmy Carter on Wednesday. By the way, Donald Trump vows to shut the Department of Education, which Jimmy Carter established. President Joe Biden will give Carter's eulogy at the National Cathedral in D.C. on Thursday, which will be an official day of mourning before the 39th president is laid to rest next to his beloved wife, Rosalynn, in Plains, Georgia, after a private service. All right, my thanks today to our guest. I guess it's fair to call him our guest, John Amato of
and our
Crooks
friend.
And our friend, John Amato of Crooks and Liars. To our producer, Desi Doyen, and to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's show or any other that we have ever done from the beginning of time, you may download them for free at bradblog.com. That is made possible thanks to those of you who hit a donate button when you stop by Bradblog or go straight to bradblog.com/donate. To sign up for a subscription to help us stay on your public airwaves. Drop me an email if you like. I am bradcast@bradblog.com, and you will find me on most of the social medias, including now Blue Sky at The Brad Blog. We'll see you there. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.